This is the new TC Pride Podcast, episode 40, part 2 of Clarity to the Chaos, with special guest Beth Zemsky. TC Pride Podcast, we are on location in Minneapolis with our special guest Beth Zemsky. You said in your last interview, the last time we spoke, that the thing about movements is that they move and that they require different things at different times. You said, I'll quote you actually here, you said, there are moments when things are critical in movements where it is about disruption and about getting folks to notice an issue that they're not going to notice any other way. So I think it's about what happens next, whether we as the LGBT movement needs to have that as a primary tactic. I've been out talking to a lot of people since the election, and I've been getting the sense lately that a lot of people are feeling like we're either already in or quickly and irreversibly approaching one of those moments.
Oh, I think we're in it. I think we're in it without a doubt. And I think that there are some really important things happening to help folks think about how to do disruptive in the most powerful way. Because part of doing disruptive is figure out what's the appropriate target, meaning who you're trying to influence, and what's the best way to influence that. And so what I would direct your listeners to is there's a group called Indivisible, that has a website, and they have some useful strategies on how to be disruptive right now and not to let anything go by. I'd also encourage folks to look to Google Moral Mondays, which was the movement in South Carolina that also constant vigilance there and did some important organizing even in the middle of a red state. And then the other resource I'd suggest people look at is Political Research Associates that have sort of like, here's six things you could do to resist Trump and Trumpism. So I think there's a lot of resources. And I think that what you're seeing is out of people's fear and anxiety and the empowerment people, some people felt at the Women's March, not everybody felt that, but a lot of people did, is it's kind of like we're going to move on what we feel. We're not going to sit home and be anxious. We're going to take to the streets and we're going to hold people accountable. So I think the most important thing people can do right now is to think about who do they need to hold accountable and to figure out the ways they can hold them accountable, whether it's taken to the streets, whether it's calling, whether it's, you know, using the relationships you have to get in front of somebody that needs to hear your voice, because I think we need all hands on deck right now.
So like I said at the beginning, you know, we talked about intersectionality last time. It's a big word. And, you know, we've kind of explained kind of sort of what it means in other episodes here. But we did talk a little bit about intersectionality last time and that there are a lot of issues that people might not think of as LGBTQ issues, but that should really be included in the discussion. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how the idea of intersectionality and solidarity is perhaps even more relevant now than ever?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've sort of alluded to it earlier about really what I appreciate about Indivisible's sort of framing for their organizing work is that part of what is coming across as a strategy, whether it's intentional or not, is to hit us with all of these things at once. One executive order after another, attacking this community or that community or whatever. And if we divide and split, that's not my issue, that's not my issue, that's not touching me, we're going to be in big trouble. Because we are, in fact, if we, all those folks who are impacted by all these executive orders, we are the majority in this country. And if we remember that and not divide amongst ourselves, we will win. The energy that is out there in opposition is way stronger than the energy supporting the agenda that this president's putting forward. Having said that, they now control the regular means of power. The reasons we have movements is that we don't have access to the regular means of power. If we had access to the regular means of power, we could just vote and our interests would be taken care of. Clearly, that didn't happen, and it hasn't actually happened for a long time. You know, where voting is enough, which is why we need movements. So the thing about movements is they have to keep moving to think about what's the power, how do we actually garner our power? And power is money and people, and the narrative we use to talk about our experience. So there's tremendous power in talking about You know, I'm with you, you're with me, these are our issues. I was at the Women's March in Philadelphia because I was there for the National LGBTQ Task Force. And, you know, there have been a number of people who have had the sign, but one of the most powerful signs to me was, and then they came for the Muslims. And not this time, no way, mother, right? I mean, they're sort of like, you know, it's like, we're not going to do this again. At first you came for the Jews and we did nothing, right? Or first you came for the gypsies and we did nothing. It's like, no, you're not coming for one of us. You're, you know, it's all of us in.
You talked last time about like this license to hate, right? How if it's granted, you know, for one group of people, eventually it'll expand to other groups.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is a moment when it's really, you know, because there's so much smoke and mirrors going on and so much doublespeak, I think it's incumbent of us to be really listening between the lines. And, you know, even this whole thing about doing away with Obamacare, the ACA, who is that going to hurt? Well, it's going to hurt all of us, but it's mostly going to hurt the poor, people with disabilities, people with pre-existing conditions, people with HIV. So how do we really think about, yeah, maybe HIV is an LGBT issue, but can we care about the disabled vet who's also maybe going to get care from the VA, but maybe needs the ACA? I mean, how do we really think critically and think about, wow, if this impacts me and I just pull on that thread and I say, who else might that impact? And really do that thinking before I go out and put whatever I'm going to put on my protest sign or think about what's the issue I'm going to talk about.
So, you know, like I said, right after the election, I talked to a lot of people, and other than a lot of fear and concern, I got the sense that everyone wanted to contribute to the well-being of the community in whatever way they could, through whatever talents or abilities or gifts that they have. Now, obviously, not everyone is going to be compelled or have the ability to engage in the more disruptive tactics. And not everyone is going to have the opportunity or tools or influence to engage in some of the more diplomatic ways that we talked about last time we spoke. I think watching the world burn around them, people might be feeling pulled in a lot of different directions right now. And, you know, they might want to help defend the Muslim community, the trans community, the Latino community, the refugee community. They might want to keep fighting for 15 or protect our rights to peacefully protest or the environment, you know, all of which seem to need defending now more than ever. Of course, no one can do everything, and that can be really frustrating and disheartening for a lot of people, I think, especially when every 5 minutes another story pops up on Facebook about, you know, how much your help is needed, you know, right now. In a way, I guess you could say that could maybe be one of the more difficult parts of intersectionality, maybe caring about everyone all the time, realizing that our faiths are so inextricably intertwined. And, you know, each of us only being able to do so much. So, you know, for people that are feeling frustrated or overwhelmed right now, but maybe have a lot of activist energy that they want to focus, what would you say to them?
So the first thing I'd say is take a deep breath and figure out what you need to do to take care of yourself, because this is going to be the long haul, whether it's 2 years until the House and Senate turn, or it's 4 years, or eight, whatever it is, that something has been, that's been underground for a while, the racism, misogyny, hopefully, is now above ground. And it's an assault on all of us. And I think some of us are having PTSD as in post-traumatic stress. Some of us are experiencing PTSD as in persistent traumatic stress. And I think we need to take care of ourselves. Having said that, so focus on some self-care. In addition to that, you know, I was thinking as you were asking this question, to some of the things we learned in the LGBT community during the HIV epidemic, because we knew we were in there for the long term. And so many of us were dealing with constant grief over the levels of losses and watching our friends and family members, you know, die these horrible deaths that were needless if, in fact, we had had what we needed, right? The reason I'm bringing that up is that one of the things I think we did well is understanding there are different roles in a movement and there was room for everybody. So there were the folks in ACT UP, right, where we went into the streets and we took over Wall Street and we threw blood at St. Patrick's Cathedral and, you know, we did a lot of disruptive tactics. And then there were the folks in the AIDS treatment groups who were inside the FDA and the CDC and they were doing science and they were lobbying and talking to people and creating solutions, doing inside stuff. And then there are folks who didn't have those skills or energy who were care buddies and were going shopping for people and providing food. I mean, I have friends in Arizona right now who are thinking about how do they turn their home into a place for illegal immigrants if the cops are, I mean, you know, how do they bring food and how do they bring care? I have, there are folks during the HIV years of the numbers of deaths we had who were care providers who did massages and took care of care providers and took care of patients, you know, people who were in hospitals or in hospice. So I think that each of us can have a role, and we look back at the history of how our community responded to HIV. Nobody was turned away who had energy. You know, there was everything from the individual caring and taking care to the in-street activism. So I think I would just encourage your listeners to really think about, you know, what's my skill set? What do I have passion for? What can I do today? And maybe today I can be in the street. And tomorrow I'm going to bake a pie and I'm going to bring it to one of our activist organizations. Or maybe I can give money. I remember when I was staff at what is now called Out Front, there was this there was a serial killer who was out shooting gay men in the early 90s. And I, you know, we were so stressed and we were so exhausted. I remember one day this woman brought a plate of brownies to us. And in the midst of all that, that was the first time I cried. And it was, I don't even like sugar. But it was just that somebody said, look, I can't do what you do, but I can bake you brownies. So I think there's something we all can do. And it's just figuring out what our talents are, what our skills are, and showing up today with what I can do, and know tomorrow you might be able to show up with something different.
So, you know, part of the big reason I wanted to come to you is that, you know, you have been a voice in the community for a long time. And I think that a lot of people in the community, in the broader intersectional community, could probably just benefit a lot, like from your experience and your perspective. Is there anything else just sort of from that vantage point that you think would be important for people within the community that are fighting for all these things to hear right now?
So I do think it's an important time to keep ourselves up on stuff, keep ourselves educated, be analytical. Don't, you know, if you see something, get a second source. You know, try to be analytical, try to be thoughtful, reach out, ask folks what they need, ask for yourself what you need. You know, make sure you're part of the equation, so it's not always about somebody else, but also it's about me and we, right? And then the other thing, this is just the Jewish mother in me, and I will say this and not always do it. Don't read Facebook 2 hours before you go to bed.
That's probably good advice. All right, well, thank you very much, Beth, for joining us here again. Sounds like you have work to do, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. But yeah, thanks again for being here, and we'll check back in with you hopefully at some point, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it.
The TC Pride Podcast has been a production of Podletter Media and Twin Cities Pride. Subscribe now on iTunes or Google Play and submit your first Pride story at myfirstpride.org.